All right. Well, hey, great to see you. We are in the final week of our series that we've been calling In the Storm. For the last 5 weeks, we've been looking at how God shows up with different people, very real people in different ways in their different storms. And for the second time in the series, we are out here on the beautiful Delta. But I don't want anybody to be nervous. It is my intention and my plan that no pastors will be harmed in the making of today's video. I don't plan on being pushed in or even jumping in. In fact, it's kind of a cold, windy morning out here on the Delta. But I'm sitting on one of the Sunshine Ministries boats. If you don't know Sunshine Ministry, Steve Mann is one of the directors of that camp, a member of our church. And Steve and Sunshine do a great job of putting on camps, primarily on houseboats, for students. And the whole idea is that you get high school, middle school students away from kind of the regular routine of life, and you get them out on a place like the Delta, where not only can they just have a great time together, but you just hear from God in a unique way when you kind of unplug and go out there. Our high school students have been out on Sunshine trips a number of times, and God has done really just some amazing thing right out here on the water of the Delta. But for me, one of my favorite things about one of those houseboat trips is watching a student try something new and learning something new, like, for instance, learning to water ski or learning to wakeboard for the very first time. I've had the privilege to be a part of helping students learn that for the first time, and it's just an amazing experience. So it starts for a kid here in the boat, and they're usually kind of nervous, but they're getting all ready, and their friends are talking to them, and they're really excited, and so finally they get all their gear on and they jump into the water. And when they're in the water, then, you know, it's kind of hard for them to get all their equipment and all their stuff going the right direction, but finally you get them going the right way, and you know, they yell, "Hit it," and you start, and they fall. And then you try again and they fall. And then you try again and they fall. And they're getting water up their nose and they're, you know, forgetting to let go of the rope and getting dragged through the water. But then finally you keep trying, and then maybe they get up and they're up for like, oh, a couple seconds, and then they fall down again. But finally, usually if you keep trying, eventually they get up. And it is so amazing to see the smile on their face as they realize, hey, I am standing up on this water, and I am just gliding across this water. Well, we are out here today because our storm story is going to look at a time when Peter pops up and glides across the water. And of course, he's not on a wakeboard, but he's on his own 2 feet. For the first time in history, somebody that is not named Jesus actually steps out of the boat and walks on water. And while Peter's stroll on the Sea of Galilee was a miracle that defied the natural order, today I want to be very upfront with my agenda for this message. You see, my desire is for each and every one of us watching this, and for my life as well, is that we would see Peter's walking on water as an example to us of what it means to disrupt some of the natural order in our own lives, to disrupt some of the comfort, to disrupt even some of the complacencies of our life, and to step out on faith and become a water walker in our world today. So you've already heard this really familiar story of Jesus walking on the water and then calling Peter to step out and to walk towards him from Matthew chapter 14. But to really grasp what is taking place in Peter's mind and heart at that time, I think it's important for us to know some of the tension that had been building in some of the events that lead up right to the event of Jesus walking on water. So in Matthew chapter 14, if you just turn back a couple pages, there's a few events that set the stage for the water walking adventure. And the first one is what is called or known as the beheading of John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist was, of course, the forerunner for Jesus. He came and he announced the way. John was one of the first ones, or the first one, really, to recognize Jesus for who he is. And John the Baptist calls out when he sees Jesus, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." And then he says, "I'm not even worthy to untie his sandals." Well, people didn't like that kind of talk coming from John and kind of the radical nature of his message. And so eventually Herod throws John in jail. And then on kind of a immature whim, Herod has John the Baptist beheaded. It's a gruesome thought to even think about it. Now, we know that when John the Baptist dies and is beheaded in that way, we know that it has an impact on Jesus, because we read that when Jesus gets the news, that he withdraws by himself up onto the mountain to be with God. But while the text doesn't tell us this, I imagine that it also had a pretty big impact, not just on Jesus, but on the disciples as well. Because suddenly they're thinking to themselves, hey, if that's what happens to John the Baptist with this whole Jesus following thing, what is it going to mean for us if we get too deep into this following after Jesus thing? So Jesus withdraws up to the mountain, and that leads to the next event, because a crowd of people follow Jesus. In fact, so many people follow Jesus that Jesus is filled with compassion for them, and there's the feeding of the 5,000 with just a few loaves of bread and a few fish. It's one of Jesus's most famous miracles. And so again, we're not told exactly what the disciples are thinking at that point, but now they've got to be thinking, oh my goodness, who is this man that we're following? Think of all the potential that comes with following after Jesus. And so I can imagine that there was a great tension that was taking place in Peter and some of the disciples, because it's a tension that we still face in our world today. Because if you think about it, on the one hand, they had seen the power and the grace of a guy who could feed 5,000 people at a time, a multitude. But we also know that they see that there is a cost to following Jesus, and that it requires us to leave our comfort zone and maybe even to leave our safety. With those two events and that tension in mind, that we come to our story for the day. And after Jesus feeds the 5,000, he sends his disciples out on a boat across the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus says that he's going to come later, and he goes up again on the mountain to pray. Jesus sends his disciples out there, and in the middle of the night, a fierce storm comes up. It's a little bit windy out here today, but it was nothing like that, because the wind was just blowing like crazy. And I want you to notice something that we actually saw before. Notice that when this storm comes up, it's not because of the disciples' disobedience. The disciples were actually doing exactly what Jesus had told them to do. The storm was not their fault. The deal is, as followers of Jesus, that doesn't mean that we are not going to face storms. It only means that we have the promise that Jesus is going to be with us in those storms. So Jesus sends his disciples out, and it's early in the morning, just before dawn. And Matthew records that the boat was way out at sea on the sea, or on the lake, the Sea of Galilee, and this huge storm comes up. And literally the Greek in that phrase says that the boat was tormented by the seas. It was being tormented. It was tossed so many places. And the disciples, as I'm sure, they're kind of in this panic of this storm. To everyone's amazement, they look off, and in the distance, they see this figure coming near them. And he's not in any boat. And he is not wakeboarding. And of course, they were terrified, because who wouldn't be? There is no such thing as a person walking on water. So it must be a ghost, they assumed. And they shrieked in fear. Well, Jesus actually comes near to them, and he speaks to them, and he says such a Jesus-y thing to them. He says, take courage. He says, it is I, don't be afraid. And boy, how often do we need to hear those words from Jesus? Take courage. It is I am with you. And so Jesus is the first water walker in history, and that is a huge deal. In some ways, it's the heart of the story, but in some ways it's not the most surprising part of the story. That Jesus is the one who can, you know, is Lord over nature, can walk on the water, is really the heart of the story. But if you've been reading in the Gospel of Matthew, in some ways we've seen that side of him before. We've seen that Jesus is Lord over nature, because he's calmed the wind and the waves before. We've seen that he's cast out demons. We've seen that he's healed the sick. We've seen that he's even raised the dead. And then just last night, remember, he was filled with compassion and he fed 5,000 men at one time. And so this water walker side of Jesus is awesome, but we've seen that side of him before. But before Jesus strolls up on the lake and says, don't be afraid, right after Jesus strolls up and says, don't be afraid, that's when the story really starts to get weird. Because among other things, the Bible is a story of walks. Even our relationship with God is often called our walk with God. And from the beginning, we see Adam and Eve walk with God in the garden. We see Moses and the Israelites walk in the desert. We see Joshua and the Israelites walk around the city of Jericho. But perhaps the most famous walk of all, the most impressive walk of all, is a regular fisherman from Galilee by the name of Simon Peter, who is so filled with faith and courage that Matthew tells us Peter got down out of the boat and he walked towards Jesus on the water. And so now Peter is a water walker as well. And I don't know how your mind works, but at least for me, when I think of something that, like that, I've got to know, Peter, how did you do that? What took place there? And so really, for the rest of our short time together, I want us to look at what are some of the lessons that we learn from the life of Peter the water walker that we can put into practice in our life as well, as we kind of just draw through some details of the text that we heard read from Matthew 14. So the first lesson we see is that water walkers recognize the presence of Jesus and they follow where Jesus calls them to go. So we already mentioned that Jesus comes to them in the middle of the night and he's walking on the water. And of course, that is a very out of the ordinary experience. That is not what they expected in any way. Their best explanation was Jesus must be a ghost. In fact, Peter's first question is really drawing out what is going on here. He says, Jesus, is that you? Lord, if it's you, call me to come out. But the first step for that person who's going to be that, following in the example of the water walking example of Peter, is recognizing the presence of Jesus when we see it. In fact, in the Gospel of Mark, we're told that Jesus was going to pass them by, but the disciples call him over and Jesus comes over to them. And in our lives, Jesus will show up in ways that we don't expect, and in surprising and way, times that we don't expect. And if our eyes aren't open to see the presence, and if our heart isn't open to seeing the presence of Jesus, so often we're going to miss it. I almost say you got to keep your spiritual head on a swivel, looking for those places where God is going to show up. You know, in the last couple months, it seems like I've talked to several people that are struggling in their faith. And one of the things that I've heard consistently said is that I just don't see God working. And yet the problem is, if we don't have our eyes open for that, or if we're allowing things into our life that are clouding our vision, that are keeping us from seeing God, of course we're going to miss God and we're not going to get to see Him. But if we're willing to open our eyes and be on the lookout for the presence of Jesus, if we're willing to get rid of the sin and the things that cloud our life from keep us to really seeing, I believe that Jesus' words are true and He will be found. And so Peter recognizes the presence and he says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come out on the water. So in other words, before Peter walks out on the water, he has to be sure that it's Jesus calling him, but then he also needs to know that it is in fact the voice of Jesus that is calling. He needs to know, if it's you, call me. It raises the question, how do we really learn to discern and hear the voice of Christ? Now, Jesus tells us actually pretty clearly how that happens. He says that the sheep who know the shepherd will know the shepherd's voice. And so the point is for us to be able to discern whether that's Jesus' voice that's actually calling us out, is we've got to spend time with Jesus. We've got to spend time in the Word, getting to know Him. We need to spend time in prayer. We need to spend time in worship, time talking to other believers, understanding so that we can know Jesus more, so that we can hear His voice. You know, when you're out in the boat with someone who's learning to water ski or wakeboard for the first time, especially if it's a boat full of teenagers, everybody's out there giving advice. And they're saying, you know, straighten your arms, you know, bend your knees, stand up straight, you know, don't do this, don't do that. And there's all this advice coming. And the person that's, you know, out there in the water can just feel overwhelmed by all the voices that are coming at them. But if they're wise, what they do is they tune into the one voice of the person that's really instructing them, and they can get rid of all that other noise and focus on that one voice where the clear and the right instruction is coming from. You know, I know you can imagine that lately as a pastor, there have been a lot of decisions to make. And there have been a lot of voices, and there's been a lot of noise, you know, about those decisions. Now, we've got a great team, and I don't feel like I have to make those things alone. But I guess what I wanted to bring that up is because, especially over these last few months, maybe more than I have in a while, my prayer has consistently been, God, I need to hear your voice. I need to hear your voice, not all the noise from all those other places, but God, we need to hear your voice. By the way, that's why today we're calling for a day for the whole church, for a day of prayer and fasting. So that as we move into this next step of beginning to meet together again in person and figuring out what the church looks like as we go forward and ministering to our community and ministering to our families and ministering to the world, we need to set aside this time to pray and to fast and say, God, we need to hear your voice. Because if you're going to be a water walker, you have to recognize that it's the presence of Jesus and you need to hear his voice and you need to step out when he calls. But that's the first thing. The second thing that water walkers do is water walkers, plain and simple, have to step out of the boat. In fact, John Ortberg wrote a book, if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. And this is what he says about that. He says, it would be tough enough to try to walk on water when the water is calm, the sun is bright and the air is still. Imagine trying to do it when the waves are crashing, the wind is at a gale force, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're terrified. He says, put yourself in Peter's place for a moment. You have a sudden insight into what Jesus is doing. The Lord is passing by, and he's inviting you to go on the adventure of your life. But at the same time, you're scared to death. What would you choose, the water or the boat? The boat is safe, secure, and comfortable. On the other hand, the water is rough, the waves are high, the wind is strong. There is a storm out there, and if you get out of the boat, whatever your boat might happen to be, there's a good chance that you might sink. But if you don't get out of the boat, there is a guaranteed certainty that you will never walk on the water. There is an immutable law of nature. If you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. You know, I've been talking about learning to ski and wakeboard and those kind of things. For me, I didn't learn those skills here on kind of the warm water of the Delta. I actually learned to water ski, first of all, on Donner Lake, which is this high mountain lake up in the Sierras, filled with literally fresh melted snow. The water is freezing there. And because it's a mountain lake, oftentimes the wind will come up, especially in the afternoon. So if you want to get the good water, what that means is you've got to get out there early in the morning. In fact, without a doubt, the best water of the day, if you want that, you've got to get up even before breakfast and you've got to get out there, and it's cold and it's difficult and you don't feel like doing it and you want to stay in bed. But if you get out there and if you take that risk and if you get out of that comfort zone, what happens is you get the best water of the day. And that's the way it is in life. When it comes to following Christ, if we're willing to make that sacrifice, if we're willing to take that risk, to even do what's uncomfortable and challenging to us, that's when we're going to find that, oh my goodness, look at me. I am out here walking on the water because I took that step to get out of the boat. And so one of the questions that we have to ask as we study this passage is, what is your boat? What for you is your place of comfort, your place of safety? What is even maybe that familiar secret sin that you're so attached to that it's hard to let it go and get out of your comfort zone? Because I don't know what your boat is, but I do know this, that there were 11 disciples that stayed in the comfort of the boat, and all of them missed the glory of the one who stepped out and walked on the water. Because if you're going to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. But here's the next thing we see about water walkers, is water walkers, sometimes they sink and sometimes they fail. You know, a lot has been made about preachers through the years, and rightly so, that it's when Peter takes his eyes off Jesus, that's when he begins to sink. When he looks around and he sees the wind and the waves, that's when he gets afraid and he starts to sink. Because the reality is that the safest place when you're in a storm is with your eyes locked right on Jesus. But I want to focus more on the fact that the truth is, really, all water walkers at some time are going to sink. And the question is, are we going to get back up again? In fact, let me just ask you this question. As you think about this story that Peter walks on the water, and then even when the wind and the wave comes and he takes his eyes off and he starts to sink, would you say that Peter was a failure I wouldn't. I would say that Peter did something courageous. But when we walk on water, sometimes we're going to sink. We've been thinking a lot about vaccines in our country lately and in our world lately. And maybe you've heard the story before that when Jonas Salk invented the polio vaccine, he tried some 200 times unsuccessfully. And someone asked him, hey, how does it feel to have failed 200 times? And of course, his answer is, I didn't fail 200 times. I just learned 200 times how not to make the polio vaccine. But he kept trying and he kept going. And that's the way it is with water walkers. We are going to sink sometimes, but we see Jesus extend his hand to us and he helps us back up and he helps us into the boat. Which brings us to the last point, which is that water walkers continue to call out to Jesus and to worship him. So what does Peter do when he starts to sink? He calls out for help. He calls out with the only words that he knows and the only words that he can really get to in that moment. He says, Lord Jesus, save me. Save me. I am going down. I'm afraid I'm going to drown. I don't have anything else to hold on to. Jesus, will you save me? I can't make it on my own. And so Peter calls out to Jesus and Jesus extends his hand and saves him. Now, theologically, I believe that when a person finds salvation and places their trust in Jesus and is made right with God, that true salvation is never going to be taken away from us. There is no condemnation for those that are in Christ Jesus. There is nothing that can snatch us out of the hand of God. But even though that means that we're not going to ever lose our salvation, that doesn't mean that we can't follow the prayer of Peter, who calls out, Lord, save me. And it's a common prayer for us to say, God, I need your help. I'm in over my head and I'm going down. Lord, will you save me? And so Peter calls out to Jesus and Jesus grabs him by the hand and he brings him back into the boat. And it says immediately the wind dies down. Who is this man? Who is this man? That the wind and the waves even obey him again. But I want you to notice what happens next. Notice what doesn't happen. The other disciples don't come up and they say, Peter, wow, you know, you were so close to doing something really great. You know, too bad you messed up there at the end. You know, hey, Peter, why don't you, you know, go dry off and, you know, clean up a little bit. And when you're all, you know, get your act back together, come on over to us and us non-sinkers are going to get together and we're going to worship Jesus. They don't say, Peter, you know, here's a towel. I think you need a little time to yourself to think about this and what you've done. And when you get yourself cleaned up, come on over and join our Jesus group. No, what Matthew records is that everyone in the boat bowed down and worshiped and said, truly, you are the Son of God. And so what that means is Peter soaking wet, Peter not yet cleaned up, Peter fresh off what many people would see as his failure, recognizes that that's not going to keep him from calling out to Jesus. That recognizes that that's not going to keep him from recognizing who Jesus is. And so in my mind, one of the most beautiful pictures of the whole thing is a soaking wet mess of a man named Peter on his knees, bowed in front of Jesus, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. Because water walkers are going to fail, but water walkers are going to continue to call out to Jesus, and they're going to worship him. And so with the death of John the Baptist, just maybe a few days in the rear view mirror, Peter goes all in, and he says, Jesus, truly, you are the Son of God, and I am with you. And I am yours, and I will follow even with the cost. Now, is that the last mistake that we see Peter make? Absolutely not. But slowly and surely, Peter's life is more and more transformed. And this man that we see in this story that is a water walker eventually becomes a world changer. And so as you think of this story and you find your place in it, where are you in this story? Are you in that place that maybe you just need to open your eyes up? You've been missing the presence of Jesus. You've not been hearing his voice. And you need to slow down and you need to open your eyes and you need to open your Bible and you need to spend that time so that you can know your shepherd's voice. Or maybe you are just in a time of comfort and complacency and Jesus is calling you to step out of the boat. Maybe you're in the middle of a season where you feel like you're failing. You feel like you're sinking and you're going down, and you just need to call out, Jesus, save me. Jesus, help me. Or maybe you're in that place where even after a struggle, you know that it's time to align your life and say, truly, you are the Son of God, and I give my life to follow you. Because here's the thing that we've been talking about for these last 5 weeks. If Jesus is the Lord over the storms, then he's worthy to be the Lord over my life.